Well, hello. Welcome to Passive Wealth for High Tech Minds podcast. There are lots and lots of IT professionals who work in the industry. These IT jobs are so exhausting mentally. There isn't much time left for such folks to make clever decisions about their investments. Most are unable to put their money in the right asset classes. This is Prashant Kumar from IDLT Gains. I have worked in corporate America in IT and in business organizations for 25 years. My goal is to educate IT professionals like you about the benefits of passive investing. I will be passing my knowledge and will bring guests who have done very well in their careers and can explain the process and advantages of passive investing. So, let's begin. Well, hello, hello. This is Prashant Kumar from IDLT Gains. You are listening to yet another podcast of Passive Wealth for High Tech Minds. In this podcast, we try to focus on high-tech folks who do not have too much time and they really want to invest passively, or we bring distinguished guests in this podcast who can teach, who can give their perspective about how passive investing into real estate can benefit a lot of W-2 or 1099 folks who are working day in and day out. Today, I have with me Tom Castelli. I have followed Tom for a long time, but it's just that we have not talked many times. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here today.
Sure. And basically, just a little background about Tom is he's a tech strategist and he's a real estate investor. You know, he helps other real estate investors keep more of their hard-earned dollars in their pockets and out of government's pocket and out of Uncle Sam's legally. You know, it's nothing illegal here. I was talking to Tom earlier. We go talk about at a surface level various advantages of real estate investing. But we said, Tom, let's focus on very niche area, you know, how real estate investing or how limited partner investing, how should limited partner, define their tax strategy, So Tom, the floor is yours, and I will interrupt, when I have questions.
All right. So the first thing to understand as a passive investor is how income is taxed. I think we should start there. So if you're in tech and you have a high paying technology job, your earnings are being taxed as ordinary income, which can be taxed anywhere between 0 and 37%, which can be quite high, and that's at the federal level. There's also going to be state tax if you live in a state that has state tax, like California, for example. That income, that bucket of income, your quote unquote earned income, is pretty difficult to shelter from taxes. However, when it comes to real estate income, while real estate's also taxed at ordinary income rates, again, from 0 to 37. However, the good news with real estate is it's really easy to shelter your rental income and capital gains from the sale of rental real estate from tax. And I'm going to break down how to do that right now. So the reason why it's so easy to do this is because there's something called depreciation. It's a non-cash expense that real estate businesses have. So if you have a rental property, you're going to have a depreciation expense, and this expense can create a tax loss for you despite the fact that you might actually generate positive cash flow. So kind of illustrate what that looks like. Let me give an example. Let's just say you earn $10,000 in rental income. Just for the sake of argument, we'll keep it easy with $10,000. Well, you might have $6,000 of hard expenses, and that's money that actually leaves your pocket. So, and what I mean by that, you're going to have advertising expenses, you're going to have property management expenses, you're going to have utilities, property tax, mortgage interest, the list goes on, right? Repairs and maintenance, all these expenses are things that actually leave your pocket. However, the depreciation expense that I'm talking about here does not leave your pocket, but it shows up on your P&L anyway. So back to my example, $10,000 of rental income, $6,000 of hard expenses that actually leave your pocket. Now let's say you have a $5,000 depreciation expense. Well, now you have a negative $1,000 net loss on, or tax loss rather, for this rental business, right? So not so you basically you pocketed $4,000 in cash flow, but you have a tax loss of $1,000. So that means that A, you're not paying any tax on your rental income. So that's so you just made $4,000 but not paying any tax on it. That's the first part of it. Part B is you now have a $1,000 loss. So what happens to this loss? Well, this loss can offset other rental income that you may have in that same year that you get the loss, or gains on the sale of a rental property that you may have. Now, if you do not have any of that in that particular year, well, this $1,000 loss in our example here is going to get carried forward to future years. And that $1,000 can be used to offset rental income in the future, in future years, or gains from the sale of real estate in the future. So that is first and foremost how the benefits of real estate really work. And it's at its core, your ability to shelter income and capital gains from tax.
So Tom, what you are really saying is basically, even if you are making money in real estate, you know, the $4,000 you have made in the real estate, you are not paying taxes. In addition to that, in your example, you have additional loss that you can either offset the other real estate income, and potentially, if there's no other real estate income, that gets carried from this year to the next year, and hopefully in the next year, it can help you to offset some real estate gains, basically, right?
And
so at what point this real estate loss can be depreciated against your W-2 income? I mean, I know that there are a lot of concepts, and I would like to hear from you. At what point, you know, the whole 4,000, 5,000 can be taken in the current year?
Right. So, okay. So there's a few different ways to do that. I'll take it from the passive angle first.
Okay.
So from the passive side, if you're a passive investor, the way that you're going to be able to do that is when you sell the property, right, that loss is going to be quote unquote unlocked. So it's no longer going to be like necessarily passive in the year you sell the property. So that loss is first going to offset any capital gains from the sale of that property, then any passive income you have from any other rental properties you have. Now, if that loss, if there's still a loss after those things happen, well, then at that point, that loss can offset your W-2 income at that point. So that is one way that can happen. I got to be honest, in the recent years with the way the market has run up, most of the time there's not enough passive losses after offsetting your capital gains from the sale to offset your W-2 income, but that is one way it can happen. Now, there's another way that this can be done, and this is more on the active side of the business, to be fair, but it's called the real estate professional status. And the way the real estate professional status works is if you work full-time in real estate, so that's to qualify, you need to spend more than 750 hours in a real property trader business and more than half of your total working time. If you do that and then you materially participate in your rentals, which is pretty much being actively involved in the operations of the properties, then you're going to be able to take that loss. That loss is not going to be passive anymore. That loss will be now non-passive, and that non-passive loss can now offset your W-2 or active income from another business or pretty much any type of income that you have at that point. If you qualify as a real estate professional, like I just mentioned, that loss can do that for you. So those are kind of the two ways to do it when you're talking about real estate.
So Tom, I know I'm going a little bit specific, and I probably know the answer of those questions, but at what point one can become the real estate professional? You know, how long does it take for someone to become a real estate professional, even if they are doing a W-2 job? I mean, what is the progression? I know, some people just quit their job. They can become the real estate professional because they don't have W-2. But most of the folks we are talking about here have W-2 jobs.
Right.
What are the better ways? You know, what are the ways they can become real estate professionals?
Right. So let me start with this. So the first thing is, the IRS considers a full-time job 2,080 hours. So that's their benchmark. It's about 40 hours per week, right? So in order to qualify again, you need to spend more than 50% of your total working time. And it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to qualify when you have a full-time job. because in order to do that, in order to prove to the IRS that this is that you actually did work more than 50% of the time, you'd have to work 2,081 hours in the real estate business on top of your full-time job. So you're talking about 81 hours per week of work for 52 weeks. And the IRS typically is not going to agree with you there. In fact, the real estate professional status is one of the most highly litigated portions of the tax code, with over 500 tax court cases. And in all but one tax court case did one person who had a W-2 job, a full-time W-2 job, qualify. And that was an interesting case because the person in question was a pilot, and they were able to prove that they only worked like 1,180 hours per week, I think was the number, somewhere around there, and that they did spend more than half their total working time in real estate. So that was the one instance they were able to kind of get away with that. But in 9 out of 10 times, or more than that, frankly, you're not going to be able to do it when you have a W-2 job. But what you can do is, if your spouse, say you have a spouse and your spouse is working part-time, or your spouse does not work at all in a different business, then they can have some rental properties that you have maybe on the side that you manage. And if they can qualify as a real estate professional, well, because you're married, when you file your tax return, if you file married filing joint, well, then you both are going to be real estate professionals. So there's one strategy where someone, one spouse, say, maybe has a high-tech job, a high income from that high-tech job, and this actually happens all the time. So, and then their spouse is able to, you know, manage a small portfolio of rental properties, qualify as a real estate professional, and then use the losses from those rental properties against the high-tech income and reduce their tax liability in some cases by tens of thousands of dollars. So that is one way to do it, to have your spouse qualify.
Awesome. That's a very, very good tip. And it's all legal, guys. I mean, it's not like, so basically what I heard, Tom, is it is very difficult for a W-2 person who is working 40 hours a week to get a RPS status, real estate professional status. Right. However, there could be a scenario where your spouse may be working part-time and she may qualify for real estate professional easily, either working part-time or she's a homemaker, but she can qualify for real estate professional. And that way, the whole income of the family,
right,
whole active income of the family is available for if there are losses from the real estate business due to depreciation.
Right, 100%.
Okay, awesome. Very good. What are the other strategies do you propose? For normal W-2 folks, you know, who have husband, wife working, what other different strategies do you propose?
The active, just a little bit on the active side, just so we cover that, and then I'll go into the passive side. So there's another strategy out there called the short-term rental loophole. Now, to back it up just a little bit, all rental activities are passive under the tax code, like we've kind of just been mentioning, unless you're a real estate professional. However, there is a special rule that if you have a property with an average stay of 7 days or less, right, then it's not considered a quote-unquote rental activity anymore. And it's just treated as a normal business. And when it's treated as a normal business, you do not need to qualify as a real estate professional to take losses. All you need to do is prove that you materially participated in the activity. And to do that, you could meet one of 7 tests. However, there's really 3 that most people really need to be concerned about. And I'll run through those right now. So the first one is you do substantially everything for the activity. What that means is you're doing almost everything for the short-term rental and no one else is really helping you outside of you and your spouse. So that's the first one. The second one is you spend more than 100 hours on the activity and no one other individual spends more time than you. And this is a popular one because a lot of people use this test specifically because you could still have cleaners come clean your short-term rental property in between stays still keep them under the time you spent. The next one is you spend more than 500 hours on the activity. If you spend more than 500 hours on your short-term rentals, then they're non-passive and that's it. It's just that simple. It doesn't matter how much time anybody else spends. So if you're able to maintain an average stay of 7 days or less on a short-term rental property and meet one of these three tests I just mentioned, then your losses from the short-term rental will be non-passive, and then they can offset your active income as well. So that's another strategy people can use because the bar is much lower. You don't need to spend more than half your total working time or even 750 hours in the real estate business to make that work.
So it seems like short-term real estate short-term real estate rental is actually opening up the space for a lot of professionals, those who are in Airbnb space,
right?
And they are able to achieve all the depreciation benefits, you know, without going through the hassle of becoming RPS, real estate professional. So the active income generated by the income generated by Airbnb kind of model or depreciation generated from that model can offset any W-2 income for husband and wife, as long as husband and wife has spent some time, 100 hours, you know, all the three tests that you just mentioned, or if they have spent more than 500 hours, then obviously the whole thing can be, the test passes. So in this case, you know, the first criteria, the 7 day criteria, I mean, what happens if, you know, short-term rental folks live there for 2 weeks or a month? How does that work out?
So the average stay of 7 days or less is an annual test. So you can have somebody stay there for 2 weeks or maybe a month, but then you'd have to make sure that the other guests stay less than 7 days so that the average works out to be 7 days or less. Because once you hit 8 days, if you hit 8 days, it's a long-term rental. At that point, it is a rental activity, and then you would need to be reps. So kind of sum it up right there. You can have people stay longer, but just know that if you do have people stay longer, that you're going to have people stay less than 7 days to balance out the average.
This is codes. Some of it, you know, like this short-term thing, even I did not know because I don't do Airbnb kind of stuff. But it is good to know if you are planning to do Airbnb within the family, that could help us to save a lot of taxes.
Absolutely.
Right. So this is very important. And so let's jump on to passive side. Tom, you were just mentioning that, you know, once after this, you'll talk about the passive. What are the different strategies that you suggest to passive investors who don't have time to do even the Airbnbs, you know?
Right. So if you're a passive investor and you really want to be as hands-off as possible, then syndications are pretty much the way to go. In my opinion, I invest in the syndications too. So, and I've syndicated a deal, so I could tell you syndications are a good path to go. And when it comes to the tax side of that, really, it becomes a game of quote unquote banking your passive losses. So right now, as of 2022, when we're recording this, if you invest in a syndicate, most of the time there's going to be a cost segregation study performed throughout that syndication, and you're going to get a certain amount, anywhere between, in my experience, 70 to 90% of your initial investment passed back to you as a loss, thanks to cost segregation studies combined with 100% bonus depreciation. So those losses, if you invest $100,000, for example, it's not uncommon to see somewhere between $70,000 to $90,000 of that come back to you in a passive loss. So meaning you'd have a $70,000 to $90,000 passive loss. Now, if you don't have any rental income that year or massive gains, then that suspended passive loss will get suspended on your tax return. And then what will happen is eventually that syndicate or another syndicate interest that you're invested in is going to be sold. It's going to be exited, and you're going to have a capital gain. You know, that's the goal, right? And at that point, your passive losses that you had suspended will be unlocked to offset that gain. So really, here's the strategy I'm trying to lay out right now. If you're invested in a bunch of syndicates, you're going to want to monitor your suspended passive losses, which can be found on Form 8582 of your individual tax return, also known as your Form 1040. That's where you're going to be able to find your passive losses. And if a syndicator comes to you, or you're on their quarterly emails, quarterly distributions, all that type of thing, they're going to let you know at some point, probably, hey, we're looking to sell this property this year. We're going to exit. And that's your cue to know that you're going to have a taxable event that year, assuming they sell. Now, you're going to want to look at that Form 4585 form 8582. And if you have enough passive losses to offset the potential gain on sale that you're anticipating, fantastic. You don't have to do anything. You're just not going to pay taxes on it. Great. But if you do not have enough suspended passive losses, maybe they were already used in another deal, or maybe they're already using this deal, whatever the case was, what you can do is you can invest in another syndicate in that same year that that one other syndicate is going to be sold. And I did this last year. And the losses from the new syndicate you invest in will be passed through to you onto your Form 1040, and they can offset the sale from the other syndicate. So that's really the strategy that passive investors want to pay attention to. And I'll just add one more thing in there. It's important to know that 100% bonus depreciation is going to start phasing out starting in 2023. So if you invest in a syndicate this year in 2022, very good chance you're going to get 100% bonus depreciation. So, and that's going to be helpful for the future, like we just mentioned. But in 2023, it's going to drop down to 80%. So what that means is you're still going to get losses from your syndicate investments, no doubt. They're still going to be pretty big at 80%. That's still pretty big, but you're not going to get it at 100%. So you just have to be mindful that it will phase out. So what I'm trying to say, and this is not investment advice, but is if you are thinking about making investments into syndicates to bank your losses for the future, then investing in 2022, 2023, these are going to be the years to do it, because once 2024 hits, you're going to be at 60% bonus depreciation. Still pretty significant, but not as high as 100 or 80. So just something to keep in mind. But that's the strategy. Basically, just monitor your passive losses so they can you have enough to offset gains on the sale of other syndicates, or invest in another syndicate to get more passive losses.
Well, this is all awesome information, Tom, and I kind of learned something, and I want to run it by you also. Basically, if you are not a real estate professional, and if you have passive losses due to syndicate business, which are sitting on your 1040 or 8582 form, and you know you want to take the benefit of it, and I mean, can there be a combination of, you know, you investing in a syndicate, you have a bunch of money, you are investing in syndication, and you know you have, you know, let's say $50,000 loss due to depreciation, and now you go and buy one short term rental and qualify for, you know, the example that we were taking earlier, it's not real estate professional, but can that, I mean, combination of these two things help investors to offset the losses from syndication and offset their W-2 income?
Both of these strategies can be used in combination. But if you use them in combination, what's going to happen is you're going to have your short-term rental losses. They're going to be non-passive, right? If you follow the strategy that we talked about earlier, and they're going to offset your W-2 income. That's great. Chances are they're not going to be suspended because you're going to use them all, most likely, in most cases.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you were using both these in unison, then you're suspended passive losses from the syndicate investment will be suspended and will be carried forward into the future and will be able to be used in the way that we just discussed. So kind of to sum that up, you can use them both, and that's kind of how it would play out if you use them both.
Okay, you can use them both, but still your losses from syndication business cannot offset the income, the W-2 income, yes, basically.
There's one way you can offset syndicate losses from W-2 income, and that's if you qualify as a real estate professional and you spend 500 hours or more on your rental properties that you own personally, then you can group in your syndicates with your rental portfolio, with your own rental portfolio, using an election that your tax preparer will do for you. And then you can take the losses from the syndicate against your W-2 income. But in order to do that, you do need to be a real estate professional. You do need to have your own rental portfolio, and you do need to spend a significant time doing it. So that's one way that can happen. But otherwise, there's really no other way to take losses from syndicates against your W-2 income in a real practical way.
That's very good to know. I mean, yes, we are talking about a lot of things that we can do, and we should know really what things that we cannot do, which is more important, right? I mean, you don't want to go and do something and then later realize that no, it is not possible. So that's very good information, Tom. Thank you so much. I hope our listeners are getting something out of what you are sharing. In addition to these strategies, what all are the different asset classes do you think are sort of, you know, available for our limited partners, you know, where they are able to get the maximum for their money?
Like investment asset classes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So as limited partners, there's other businesses you can invest in as a limited partner. ATM machines are popular amongst investors, you know, good cash flow on those businesses, high amounts of depreciation, effectively all the ATM machine is going to qualify for 100% bonus depreciation. So usually when you're investing in ATM machines, you're going to get big passive losses passed back to you, and those can be used to offset your real estate income and vice versa. So that's a very popular asset class. Car washes are another popular one we see a lot. Obviously, what we're talking about today, residential, commercial, real estate, can also be powerful. I mean, those are the ones that come to mind, but really any business that you invest in that's a partnership and you're a limited partner, you're just putting the money up, can be good, assuming the underlying business is good.
So basically, besides, in the real estate, we know a couple of asset classes, you know, like multifamily, storage, or mobile home parks, or assisted living products, or the hotel, hospitality. Besides that, you know, smaller businesses like car washes or funds like ATM funds, which can produce a lot of depreciation for investors. And, there are actually numerous advantages. So basically, as I said, you know, these are codes written by IRS. And correct me, Tom, if I'm wrong. These are the codes, tax codes written by IRS. And IRS wants you to invest. Yes. They want to give you the benefit. Yes, common man doesn't have time, and common man doesn't have the insight into trying to go and invest into real estate. They usually try to put their portfolio into stock market and bond market, and you know, as we are recording this, how the stock market is behaving. Right. You can potentially lose without doing anything. You can potentially lose your shirts within a couple of days. The tangibility of the asset is not there, so to say. So there are numerous examples. There are numerous benefits of investing into tangible assets if you are conservative. In my mind, you know, I mean, a lot of people invest in stocks, options, and I have nothing against them, but the idea is to invest into some portion of your portfolio into tangible assets, so that everybody's going to need place to live, whether it is in recession or after recession, during recession or not, right? Everybody would need place to live. So the value of the asset will always be there. Maybe it will come down a little bit, but we have talked about many times. So Tom, again, any best advice that you can give to investors, you know?
Yeah, I think we covered a lot here today. The best advice I can give you is invest in real estate. From a tax perspective, it is one of the most tax advantageous assets that are in existence, and that the tax code provides plenty incentives for you to invest in real estate and really provide housing for the general public. So that's the best tip I can give you, is to invest in real estate. And that's the tip.
That's the tip. Okay. No, we have heard it. We have heard this tip many, many times. Tom, I usually ask, what is the best way somebody wants to reach you? How can they reach you?
Yeah. So thank you. And I'm going to give three quick ways to do it. So if you're a listener of a podcast, you want to check out a podcast where we talk about taxes all the time on the podcast, check out the Tax Smart Real Estate Investor podcast, all podcast platforms. We talk about taxes there all the time. So that's one way. You can get in touch with me directly on Twitter. So at Thomas Castelli _. Or if you want to potentially work with our firm, you have tax issues that you need to work on, you go to therealestatecpa.com. And those are the three best ways to get in contact with me.
Awesome. So realestatecpa.com, the podcast, tech strategy podcast, right, Tom?
Right, the Tax Smart Investor podcast.
Yeah, Tax Smart Investor podcast and Twitter. You know, Thomas is on Twitter, Thomas Castelli, Castelli. So no, Tom, thank you so much for coming today on this podcast. I'm humbled and honored that you chose to sign up for this. And I'm pretty sure, you know, my listeners, our listeners would like it. And I'm, you know, and hopefully we continue to build better relationship with our investors. And over a period of time, this could be fruitful for you and for us in all senses.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here again.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. As usual, you can reach me via my website, www.myrealtygains.com, and via email, prashant@myrealtygains.com. I would love to hear from you and talk to you about specific needs you may have. Please schedule an appointment with me via my website, again, www.myrealtygains.com. Stay tuned for next podcast. This is Prashant Kumar signing off for today.